Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Comics, but instead of talking about the traditional four-color comics of old, we break out some of the non-traditional graphic novels we have stashed in our closet. This show is also dedicated to Lisa's mom, who is a little under the weather, and we know she listens to the show sometimes, so we wish her well. For more information about news and links we talk about on the show, go to our website at www.geeksone.com.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Hello, my geek
mates. Another week.
Welcome back. It feels like it's been forever.
Well, it
hasn't been forever, but it's after the E3 episode, so we're in a little bit of a time warp slash wind down period.
Matt's back.
And we have another special guest geek this
week.
Yes,
we do.
Due to sweeps, we have Lisa Lassick in a bikini for this episode.
That's right.
Running in a bikini today.
I also brought mine, so it was a little awkward because we were wearing the same one. So.
Aaron, you need to shave.
When that happens.
Aaron, you need
I'm
to
really
wax,
uncomfortable,
man.
All of a sudden.
Really need to wax.
Well, how was everybody's geek week? Anybody do anything geeky after E3?
Does James Bond count as geeky?
Yes, in my opinion.
Okay. What did you James Bond?
James Bond, but when I was in Cabo in Mexico, I ran into Pierce Brosnan.
Which was
weird.
The man formerly known as James Bond.
The man formerly known as James Bond. And it's really funny because not only did I run into him on the beach, but afterwards we ran into him on the airport and he was on the same plane as us. And his kids were there, and it was really funny because his kid's playing a video game, and all of a sudden his kid stops and looks at his dad and goes, "Dad, there's this really stupid place in the James Bond movie. Why did that happen?" And he like has this whole detailed thing, and I was like, wow.
He has to explain to his kid why his last movie sucked.
Oh, my like, God.
Halle Berry was terrible. The guy with the diamonds implanted in his skin. Who thought of that?
Mr. Kill? I could have written that.
That's his life every day.
Why did they dump you for the other guy?
Yeah. Oh. Have you seen the trailer? He looks like he can take care of business.
Yeah.
Hey, no, actually, business. Daniel Craig.
Is he a brunette now?
No.
He's a blonde Bond?
Yeah.
He's kind of light brown Bond.
Daniel Craig
He's a Sandy Bond.
Sandy Bond. Daniel Craig is one of the sort of untested commodities. He's like, he's a very good actor, but he's kind of never quite taken off in that way.
He's a dirty Bond.
Well, yeah, because he's got. I mean, he's just. He really is very rugged.
Just in Munich.
Yeah, he's cool.
A Steven Spielberg film.
But he was just. Yeah, a side character.
I saw two new trailers today.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the new X-Men trailer, and it looks juicy. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
I am assured that there will be much action in there. I'm curious as to how much story there'll be.
Sideline note: are any of you impressed with the Superman trailer?
Oof.
No.
There's a shot in it I like.
I like one a shot single in it. Shot. Is it the one where he's in space looking at Earth?
No. For me, it's
favorite.
All the people on the steps looking up.
Looking up, yes.
There's one.
When he flies through the city street, that's a good effect.
Yeah,
I like the cornfield. Or the wheat field where he jumps.
Okay, so maybe it is a good trailer. Because
as a kid, we had to go through that BS again.
Oh, you mean he was born on a farm? Superman? I didn't know that.
Aaron, well, hold on.
Aaron, I'm going to give you a hint. I'm going to give you one hint. All right. Children are born every day. These children don't know the Superman myth, so you do have to reintroduce
it. Who rents the 70s version?
Oh,
who?
Yeah, that'll happen.
Who goes to see a Superman movie who doesn't know he was from planet Krypton?
Children!
Oh, no. You got to understand, those children, they look at the 70s version like we look at, I don't look at black and white films, but like most people look at black and white films. They go, those special effects, they don't look like slick. They don't look like computery.
But we believed that a man could fly in the day. When that came out, that was the whole selling point. Was
yeah, that was Reeves, man. Yeah. Reeves did that.
He was pretty neat.
Can you read my mind?
how long
oh my God, you couldn't get away with that now.
How long do you think it'll be before this Superman has something horrible happen to him?
Oh, God.
You all know the curse, right?
Yeah.
Everyone who's played Superman has had something horrific happen to him or committed suicide or something.
Yeah, George Reeves committed suicide. Chris Reeves, that was horrific.
There was another one who played Superman, too.
Yeah, but nothing happened to him. Yeah.
What about Lois and Clark? I know. He got put on Ripley's Believe It or Not.
As yeah, yeah. His that's career tag.
Believe It or Not.
All right. I miss Jack Palance.
How about some
But I also saw the Ghost Rider.
Oh.
Okay, now, have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw it.
What'd you think?
I thought the trailer was cut well.
The trailer was cut very well.
And they had some cool graphics when the reflections on there, but he looks like a complete doofus in
that. As long as Nicolas Cage is nowhere to be seen, it looked interesting.
No. The little flaming skull thing looks dumb. And he's like driving up the side of a building on his motorcycle. Like
I didn't see him driving up the side of. I saw him rappelling down one.
No, he drove up and the windows shattered, and he drove down and used his little whip to swing around. It was
chain,
or chain, or whatever.
It actually didn't look as horrific to me as I was expecting it to be. I like gathered people around. We all sat down. We watched it together, expecting to be able to pan the thing, and we're like, "Eh."
I'm sorry, that was not a great comic book. Why would they make it into a movie?
Nick Cage wanted to do it.
Ant-Man is on the lineup.
You know, which makes me believe that Marvel doesn't have that many good franchises. They've got like three.
Marvel does. The problem is most of them have crashed and burned in the past. Like Captain America. Anyone remember seeing the Captain America movie?
Yeah. Stinky.
No?
Yeah, I remember.
Smell bad.
Remember the old TV series? From the 80s? Early 80s, late 70s? Oh, where he had that cool motorcycle that came out of the back of the van?
No.
And he had a TV. And he juiced
And
he juiced up. Yeah.
That was cool.
He shot up.
Yeah. That's how he got his like superpowers, I think.
Oh, there's a good show for kiddies.
Oh my god.
Steroids are good.
Well, you know, Matt didn't make it to the E3 talk, and he saw some stuff that we actually didn't see. Do you want to talk a second?
Yeah, I'm going to do that as my news segment.
As your news segment.
When you come around to me, I'm going to do two little things, one on just generally what I saw and one on my best of.
Well, right. I just want to throw out, Lisa and I are both playing Oblivion, and so is Aaron right now. And my wife mentioned to me, she's like...
Keep going.
She's like... What's you know, you're playing this game a lot, you know, and I said to her, honey, you have to understand, it's like they wrote this game, they designed this game just for me.
But they wrote it just for me.
Yes, and my brother called
that
me
can't
up.
Be true because the character looks just like me.
Yeah,
so
yes.
Obviously it was written for
I
me.
Yes, but you designed your character to look like you. And my brother called me up and he left me a message. He goes, okay, if you haven't played Oblivion yet, go out and get it right now. And
so
I thought that was I thought it was funny because he used the exact same tone I had for it. So,
oh, man.
And there are two new downloads for the people who've already gone through 200 hours of Oblivion and have finished it.
Wow.
Which I don't know.
Do you think you will ever do that, Aaron?
No, I'll probably go through the storyline on a lot of quests because it really is. It's a fun game.
But you'll finish the game.
I actually might finish this one.
Okay.
Surprisingly,
he's addicted.
But those of you who want to do continue, there is the new Pirate's Cave, which is like $2 or $3 to download, and it's a whole cave you can explore with a sunken pirate ship in the middle. And then there's the Mage's Tower, which is, I guess, in there, but it's locked. So they've built a whole dungeon underneath, so when you go into the Mage's Tower, you have a whole several adventures down there. And it's cool. They're like $2 or $3, and you just download them, put them on your hard drive, and you can keep continuing.
It's a brilliant concept. They can just keep adding on to this as long as
Well, they also have the $2 horse armor,
yeah,
which doesn't seem like worth $2.
But apparently a lot of people bought it.
Well,
it's $2.
It's $2.
Horse armor.
It's true, but...
It's barding.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you kind of just... It's early right now. There's not a lot of things to buy. Like, I bought Uno. Just because I wanted to see, you know, I wanted to pay, you know, it was like...
If I had a 360, I'd be playing Uno with you right now.
Can you play online with other people?
And when the camera comes out, you can do video chat Uno.
So will it call you if you don't scream Uno into your mic?
No, you have a Uno button.
You have to hit the Uno
button. I
sort of
dread that day. Like, when you have to monitor not only what your kid is playing, but who is doing what on your child's screen while he plays.
There is a parental lock for the camera on the Xbox 360. So you can set it so that you have, if you want to use the camera, you have to put in a code. And if your kid just tries to start the 360, they can't just turn on the camera. So all the video, which is cool. It's a good idea.
How many parents are savvy enough to use it?
Apparently, it's pretty easy.
No, apparently.
These days, I think it would be fairly easy. I mean, the system seems really well designed. I got to say, I'm so impressed with my Xbox 360 and the design of it and how everything works and, you know.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
I want one now.
So all right. So we should move on to.
I so can't afford one.
We should move on to. Well, you're saving up for your PlayStation 3.
I'm saving up to pay off my car.
Yeah.
So let's move on to news / reviews / thoughts of E3. Maybe you should, since we're talking about video games, Matt, you should start with your...
I'll start off. So, E3 for me, I got to really sort of go in and play things and really
had
a...
Yeah, you got to go.
Yeah, Aaron was kind enough to get me into the big event, and it was pretty... I loved it. You guys sort of panned it a bit, didn't you?
I loved it.
It was nice.
Right. I panned it a little bit. I thought that I saw a lot of things. There were some things I really liked, but there were a lot of games that just felt really similar to me and not that inventive. And
yes,
that
that's true. So, first As of all, just off the top, Stan Lee was there, and I got to see Stan Lee and say hey and shake his hand, which was cool. And Adam West was there, and I was trying to get his autograph for Aaron, but I didn't want to wait in the line.
For me?
Yeah.
I'm an Adam West fan?
You're a huge... Come on. You have a picture of
I'm
him on the
picture
wall.
Of yourself watching him.
Yeah.
I was like five.
Says you.
All right.
Anyway, whatever happened with the booth babe thing? I thought there was all these restrictions on the booth babes.
No, there were restrictions on what they could wear. So instead of showing skin, they spray painted clothing on them.
Yeah.
So they were just tighter and thinner, like the Activision girl.
Yeah, but I noticed that there were, there was plenty of skin showing.
I thought there was booth babes are fine.
We did manage to track down the name of the Activision woman.
Yeah, I don't know if that was her, the one I saw, but yeah, she's like a soft porn star.
Right. So, yeah, and I really liked Medusa. I thought Medusa was hot.
Aaron. It's respectable.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, all right. So, here's the overview. Fatality gaming gear and equipment, first of all, was incredible. It's this incredible new thing that allows you to very simply, rather than having to go in and mess with your BIOS and stuff like that, overclock your processor speed.
Unfortunately, you're giving money to that a-hole Fatality. That guy's severe.
He might be an a-hole, but he's amazing.
He's amazing.
I'm serious.
Freaking amazing.
And the stuff that you're going to be able to do with this is unreal. With just a click of the button, you can double your processing speed, which you can almost triple it, but you got to make sure that you have the rest of your stuff to be able to compensate for
it. Like coolant.
Yeah, like your computer inside your freezer.
The other thing is you also can do the exact inverse, is you can shut down unessential systems so that you can get your computer to run completely quiet for movies, and you can get it to run less hot and stuff like that. We, and it's very, very cool.
I wish they could do that for the 360, if you know what I mean. Damn.
Few things. Mortal Kombat Armageddon. I know you guys liked it. I hated it. I thought it was a POS.
Well, I said it was fun because I was playing it with Peter.
Right.
You know?
I thought
a lot of those games, it depends on who you're playing it with. And
like Corn Dog looked like a side scroller. Didn't like it. Justice League Heroes will be a very cool game over the next.
We had the exact opposite reaction. We thought
biggest
it was
steaming pallet at the show.
You didn't like Justice League?
It looks like the Fantastic Four and the other Marvel.
It's like 45 seconds of joy from that game. Figuring out what they could do, and then once I'd seen it, I was done.
Yeah, oh, really? You had the leveling system, the ability to add
like
new power.
Really, this is an old system. X-Men Legends.
Yeah, the X-Men Legends has the same thing. It's the same platform and system that we've
played Baldur's
before.
Gate.
Yeah, and
it's Baldur's Gate,
and it's but it's it's been done, and it's got that whole clunky thing where you punch. And then punch, and then
the gameplay was kind of.
I was playing as the Flash and having a joyous time.
Well, could it have been just early and maybe the controls weren't locked yet, or
they were still pre alpha. So I'm
so
hoping that's the case.
Yeah, one of the things that what I saw was that you can move the camera all the way up and play it like Baldur's Gate, and all the way down and play it like a third person shooter.
That's normal.
Well, that's cool.
I can do that with Baldur's Gate. Yeah.
You couldn't do it in Fantastic Four.
Yeah, you can do it in X-Men, though. I mean, the X-Men Legends that you've got, it's the same thing. Yeah. Huh.
I
can you play it online with your buddies, though?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, that you could do.
Yes, and you can play the entire story lane with your buddies. Anyway, next. There were tons of poker games, and that's what I didn't understand. That was just really weird. Okay. A few others. Crackdown.
Back to poker.
Sure.
There is going to be an Xbox 360 download that will be free. It's sponsored by a casino, and they built up an online poker game. You can play with your buddies online, chat, play poker, and it's going to be a free download. So just wait for that on your 360.
But what money does it use? Points?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, gamer points. That'd be awesome.
That would be really cool.
Microsoft points or whatever those are.
Yeah. Hell
interesting.
Crackdown. Looks like a cool new co-op third-person shooter. Play the whole game. It's specifically made to play the game co-op all the way through the game with your friends.
It's like Grand Theft Auto with superheroes,
yes,
in a way.
Cool. Yeah. N3, otherwise known as 99 Nights, which I thought was totally a porn name.
That just released.
Did it?
This week in
Japan. It looks just like Seven Kingdoms, but which Don and I played addictively for a while.
You mean Dynasty Warriors?
Dynasty Warriors, sorry. Yeah, tons of same sort of lots of Chinese warriors running in the field kind of feel. I thought the Blizzard booth sucked.
It was pathetic.
Yeah, I mean, really, they just
It was
decided.
Like they were just renting a corner from someone else.
Although the one thing that I thought was funny about that was that Blizzard still, even though they had, you know, they're showing the same trailer from last year, they still had this huge booth, and all of the other little MMORPGs were in, like, a little wayward corner. And they had, like, one person on it each. It was really sad.
I don't know, I think you're a little Warcraft happy. I mean, there was some, like... Lord of the Rings Online, Dungeons & Dragons Online had a pretty big booth, and they had lots of setups there.
Right. The Conan
and
booth
was... Huxley had
the Conan booth dominated.
Yeah, Conan booth was pretty awesome.
Huxley was huge and had a giant, like, stage and weird shit like that.
Lost Continent. Didn't know whether or not you talked about that.
Lost Continent?
Extreme Condition. That's what Lost Continent Extreme Condition is what it's called. It looked like it was on Hoth.
Yeah, Lost Planet.
No, it's called Lost Continent.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll have to double check. Aaron's got a download of it, so.
Okay. I thought maybe they changed the name.
It kind of looks like Matrix things flying around in the caves and stuff. Mechs. You can climb in the mechs.
Yeah, you can climb in the mechs, and they're weird sort of bugs that pop out of the ground and stuff like that. That'd be cool. Top Spin 2, which I have many, many hopes for. Splinter Cell Rogue Agent, of course, looked really, really awesome. There was an amazing pixel art gallery that had really cool God of War, which was great. The worst game in the entirety of E3 was this new game.
Work Time Fun?
No. That actually looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Is called PK Daredevils, which is Frogger built over a city, basically. And all you do is leap over things and gets points for doing it. I leapt over a fence. I jumped over a building. I jumped over a fire
escape.
That's
a PlayStation 3 launch title, right?
Yes. No, actually, no joke, yeah.
No.
Really, really crappy. However, on the other side, there was The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, which is a fantastic party game. And I think it was designed by... Cartoon Network, but I think the ones in this case were designed by John Kovalik, or at least it looked like it. The guy who does the games Munchkin and stuff like that. Really, and he did... Dork Tower as well. That's what all the characters look like, and it was, I mean, just cute.
Have you
little
seen
characters
the cartoon?
No, I have not.
They look like his art.
Okay, so maybe it's you know, just similar, but really, really cool, fun game. Big hammers, things slamming down, great. And then EVE Online, which was pretty amazing.
Massive. I've only seen an early version of that. The early version I saw was really not terribly interesting.
Right. It's interesting to have a 5,000 galaxy world, shipbuilding, territory control, piracy, theft, scamming. It's all part of the world.
Yeah, a lot of it's like economic domination.
Yes.
You know,
which sounds great to me. Like, I love that stuff. So.
Yeah. And did anybody else see this thing called Happy Feet?
No.
With penguins dancing, and you could control dancing penguins?
I think that's actually...
is it a movie?
It's a movie.
Okay. Yeah. That's it. And that was it. That's the overview, and I'll do my...
Actually, you mentioned something to me the other day.
No. I got those. Those will be my next news. Just
next
sort of my big three.
Okay, your big three.
Yeah, go. Okay. Don.
Big three?
He's saving I'm saving my big three favorites
three
from
picks.
E3.
Ah, okay. Well, speaking of which, while we're on the subject of E3... We brought loot back for Lisa.
Yay! Because I was so depressed.
So what
you got
what
no
has
swag?
Lisa won?
I got nothing because
so
I didn't get to go.
What did you get at E3?
Lisa has won.
Yay!
A press kit for The Witcher.
Awesome.
The Witcher.
I love swag.
I'll pass these over. We have a bag for you too.
Wow.
The official LA Convention Center E3 exhibit guide.
So I can see everything I missed.
Right.
A second press kit for The Witcher. I'll keep it.
we have Titan Quest.
One of the MMORPGs that we came across while we were there.
Cool.
Excellent.
We also have...
Did you get the army game?
Nah.
Oh, one here, a robot gave me the army game, like a little army
robot. Oh, one of those
bomb-disarming
robots.
That's
robot.
Cool.
Awesome.
So that you can decide your opinion on it, Justice League Heroes, the official E3 demo.
I believe I need to investigate that personally.
I believe
what,
that
is this
need
a
one more
PC? that's a PC thing?
No, I think that's a press kit demo. So
oh, I see. Okay. Things. Video.
Cool.
We also have a hack keychain for you.
Excellent. This is the kind of and stuff I love at E3.
This was the crowning achievement. Now, awesome. Unfortunately, we went on Friday and they didn't have nearly as much swag. Mm-hmm. But my crowning achievement was wrestling a small child to the floor and taking from him Medieval 2 Total War Battle Mace keychain.
Excellent.
It's actually a Morning Star. You'll be able to take
that
out people
is
with that.
Too cool.
So
you scored.
There you go.
You did well.
Next year, we should, if we hit E3, we should get our swag and give it to one lucky geekling out there in
this
geek world.
This is so awesome.
We'll auction
Thank
it up.
You so much. You don't understand what this means.
At least you have something, a little taste.
You got your E3 information from our Geeks On episode.
I did, as you pointed out on the show, which doubled my embarrassment, because there I was listening to it going, oh, I've got to get my news from this. This is so sad. And then you said, this is sad, but Lisa's going to have to get her news from this. I was like, damn
well,
it.
My news story this week is, we're not going to put up a link for it. It's just a fact. Invasion has been canceled. Some of you know that Naobong of that show came on and spoke with us at length about the creation and the execution of that show.
Execution? So, interesting choice of words, Don.
Well, there you go.
It's put down.
Though what's interesting is until we talked about it with Naobong, I had never really heard anyone talking about it. It was not a big popular where I work at Geek Central. Mm-hmm. If there is a sci-fi show, I'm going to hear about it from someone.
And you heard nothing.
Invasion was a dead zone. I heard nothing about it until we did the episode, at which point, everyone at work apparently watched the show, but no one really mentioned it.
Well, you know, we don't have enough viewers to have turned the tides.
We did not.
Well, you know.
Throwing stones into the storm.
It might be interesting to get her on for a segment just to find out where the show was going and what it was, what all the secrets
what would have
were.
Happened.
Yeah, well, she probably can't say if they're, you know.
She probably can if it's canceled.
If
we
it's
can find
totally
out.
Done.
Well, we have to know what happened to your wife. She got sucked down into the water.
Yeah, I know. My wife got swallowed up by an alien.
Kick ass.
She was on Invasion?
My wife was on the last one.
Oh, my God.
She was on the season finale. She's a pregnant hybrid with a litter of little, aliens.
Her wife's having a litter?
Yeah, my wife is having a litter.
I have to see that.
And then she got pulled under by this alien and pulled away.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, we got to know what happened.
I got to find out.
That's
so
sad.
I got to know what's going on with my wife because she's getting
home
strange.
She's different.
So. Lucy, right, you smell different.
Yeah, that was a great line. That scared.
That was the best.
That was before the show came out and the radio ads freaked me out.
Mommy, you smell different.
That little girl's, by the way, a very good actress.
Yeah, she was the best thing on the show.
I am doing not a news article, but I am doing a quick review of this game that Don and I played.
That's
and
correct.
Don, I, Dylan, and Eris played one day. This is Federation Commander Klingon Border. For those of you who don't know what this is being put out by the same people who put out Starfleet Battles, which is, of course, one of my favorite strategy war games.
Federation Commander Klingon Border sounds a little Brokeback to me.
Well, it does a little, actually, but they plan on coming out with several
what would
boxes.
What that be in Klingon?
I don't know.
Ooh-ha! but unfortunately, Starfleet Battles of over the last 35, 40 years that it's been out has collected so many rules and has gotten so complex that it's almost collapsing, or if it hasn't already collapsed on itself.
Under its own weight?
It's hard to get people to play. It's hard to buy it and learn it. It's hard to, it's hard to just play a quick game,
Aaron,
pull it out.
That's because you got to go to 4 years of college to know how to play the game.
Yeah, I mean,
majoring in Starfleet Battles.
Exactly. I mean, you have to fill out this tax form every turn that takes about 20 minutes to a half hour to fill out. So, still love the game.
It's really true.
I still love the game. It's if you want a hard
But you love 1099s, too.
Yeah. Well, this actually streamlines the game. This was put out to take Starfleet Battles, take out all the really annoying parts of it, the tax form and the 32 sub-turn per turn game.
God.
32 individual
turns.
Instance. What was it? Rounds per
I forget.
Per,
I just remember one round. Day we went over to Aaron's to play this thing. We finished three turns. The 8 hours we played.
Yeah, I mean, but a lot happens in three turns.
So,
but,
how long did the game
so
play?
We played with four people we had never played before with four ships.
Okay.
Okay, which is, in Starfleet Battles would be a very big game. And it would probably take hours and hours. We played it for about 2 hours.
Three.
Best two and a half, yeah, two and a half, three. Yeah. We probably could play it faster now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also two scales of it. You could play it just like Starfleet Battles, where you have the same type of style of ships, or you can play it with half point ships. So you can play larger fleet battles and have it take less time. So
or
that
just
it takes,
play the same type of battle and have it take half the time.
Or yeah, or take the exactly. If you want to play a little 45-minute game, half hour game, you could take two ships. They would blow each other up quickly. But if you really want. There's not a whole lot of great space battle games out there, and this is in the Star Trek, original Star Trek universe. If you want good strategy game that's not very complex,
and Aaron will come over to your house and teach you.
Right? You don't
because he'll
it,
have to.
Really, this is a lot easier. You don't have to fill out tax forms or anything like that. The turn is only 8 rounds.
Okay. Now, Aaron is the hardcore gamer here.
Right.
So I think I have to step in with a counter review.
Okay. Well, let me just finish up because okay. I know exactly what you're going to say. If you want a strategy war game and you're a strategy war gamer, this is for you. If you are a Euro gamer who likes fancy, good-looking bits, really nice boards, really nice plastic figurines, a more Euro-style gaming experience.
I didn't realize that was Euro-style.
Yeah.
Yeah, really? Euro-style is the pretty...
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Euro-style rules where there's less chance, where everyone's kind of playing during the round, and something to get done, a big game done in a 90 minutes. This is not your type of game. This is for war gamers. I would say it replaces Starfleet Battles. If you don't have Starfleet Battles, pick this up. If you have Starfleet Battles and you want to start playing it, but you can't convince your friends, you might be able to pick this up and convince them to play because it's a lot faster and I think a lot more fun. Don, you've played both.
I think it was...
And you're not a war gamer. You don't.
I'm not. I had fun playing this game. Mm-hmm. I would sit down and play it again. I absolutely would.
Yeah.
I disagree with Aaron saying that it's a very simple version. There were still points where like, okay, I've got a shuttle. Can I do something with my shuttle? No? Okay, I've got drones, but... I've got anti-drones. Do I have both? We're not sure. I have no idea.
Well, it was our
just
first
shove
game.
Shove the drone out the airlock and pretend it's a shuttle.
It was our first game, so, you know, war games have a lot of, you know, complex rules. But it's right. No Starfleet Battles.
No, it's no Starfleet Battles.
Where there is something you can do with
there are some simple things they could have done to improve it, like simply, changing the phaser design on the little board so you could tell how much energy it took. You know, and putting the amount of energy next to the things that used them.
Right.
You know, would have been really useful.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely simplified, definitely much more streamlined.
Yeah.
Much easier to approach than Starfleet.
Webster's Dictionary, not the OED.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Lisa Lasek.
Yes.
Or, no, sorry, I skipped. Aaron.
No, I'm done.
That was Aaron.
Oh, that was your news?
Yeah.
Lisa Lasek.
That's my name. Oh, I have to do news. Oh, okay.
You don't have to.
Well, okay. My story is, of course, a video game-oriented big surprise.
Kick-ass.
And that is about this thing that just came out about how PS3 is trying to avoid having their games resold. You know how, like, EB Games
sells. Read this.
Yeah, it's really interesting, but the question is, are they going to be able to pull it off? But anyway,
they don't want them
the
resold?
Dilemma is, yes, you know how you see all those used games?
Right.
That's where I buy. EB Games basically can sell the same game over and over again. All those profits go to EB Games or the retailers.
And not the game manufacturers.
And Sony gets none of it. So they're trying, and this is like a sticky legal question. I don't know if they can pull it off. They're trying to say that they're selling a license, like basically how you agree to your license
like
on your
Microsoft.
Software. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is yours. And they're trying to tell the retailers they can't resell them.
So when you buy a PlayStation 3. Now, this is rumor. This hasn't been officially announced.
No, I mean, and it's not even sure if this is going to work legally.
So,
speaking.
Sony would like, supposedly, Sony would like to sell a PlayStation 3 game on a Blu-ray disc, just like anything else. But when you start it up or within the booklet, it will say, you probably have to do it when you purchase it.
Yeah, you'll I'm not to, sure it, when you'll put in your code.
It will
yeah.
say,
you have to agree.
You are buying. You're agreeing to buy the license to play this game. You don't own it.
Except, do not accept. Here's your code.
Right. You can't give it to a friend. You can't sell it back to eBay.
That's lame.
It's really tricky because we're too used to owning the disc and having the hard copy and being able to. I mean, and you know, people rent them.
Lame.
There are a million ways that people swap them. But anyway, it's really I think too difficult. They're saying that there is one way they could make. They do have a technology where they could key a certain game to work in your certain player, but that
I mean, they do that with iTunes.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a hard drive,
they've already made some attempts at this with PC stuff. Like, I was playing Final Fantasy XI once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
I got bored. I canceled my account. A friend of mine wanted to play, so I sold him my discs. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Before I gave him my discs, I went in and I very carefully called up customer support and said, "I am no longer playing this game. Remove my credit card. Remove all association of any payment form from this CD key." And they're like, "Oh, fine, whatever." And I sold it to my friends. He loaded it up, and sure enough, my credit card information was still in there.
And they charged you a credit card?
World of Warcraft did that.
He was honest to me, and he was like, "Oh, look, this is here. I don't know what to do with it." So he wasn't able to use it. I had to give him back the money. But, yeah, they have to be really careful with this sort of thing, because I could turn around and sue their asses for giving my credit card information to a total stranger.
That's right. Aren't there privacy rules about that?
There sure are, especially if you call in and you know, I'm sure they have a recording of me somewhere going, "Okay, it's gone, right? It's gone. It no longer exists. It's not there. Okay, we're sure? We're sure? Good."
Wow, that's terrible.
But what they would be saying is that you violated their licensing agreement by
selling it to someone else.
All right.
You subletted.
There's a program I use called Final Draft. It's a screenwriting program, and you have to authorize the program before you can use it.
Most programs are licensed. You don't own the program.
Yeah. But no, you don't understand. What I'm saying is that the program won't work until you put it on the computer and it contacts a server and then authorizes it. It simply won't work. So
Adobe's doing that now too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they did
that. Too bad.
Now, here's the thing. You know, I know that the podcast Twit. Don't you listen to Twit?
Mm-hmm.
They had a conversation weeks ago. They were talking about how some of the older companies that have had the strictest piracy protection are the ones that have been out of business now. Even like even things like Photoshop and all these. There used to be competing programs that were running up against Adobe and all that. And a lot of people have Photoshop. They steal Photoshop for their home use.
It's so easy to steal. Yeah.
So they learn it at home and they use it once or twice a year. But they're not going to go buy a $400 copy of Photoshop. But everybody knows how to use Photoshop. So when they go to their office and they say, "We need to buy 300 copies of Photoshop for this office, or of a program like that for this office, what should we buy?" Well, let's buy the thing that everybody knows how to use.
Yeah.
The one that's on everybody's computer that they stole, Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, "Listen, you may think that you're protecting yourself, but in the long run, think about it. You want to get people comfortable playing these things, or
Yeah, Sony's just trying to they're freaking out because they're worried about the fact that their unit's going to cost $600.
It's interesting, though, that they've taken this step because it is money, technically, that they're not seeing. The thing is that retailers nowadays make a ton of money off of
they
those
love
used games.
That.
So to take away that
and the big
would
companies
be
like EA, Activision, all the developers and all the people putting these things out hates eBay. I mean, hates EB Games.
EB Games, right.
It's killing them.
So,
supposedly. It's killing
them. If all the game companies took a stand, then maybe, but
I don't think
Well, actually, if the unit PlayStation is doing it, I mean, all the game companies are pretty much doing it. It's the
If it's a PlayStation specific thing, then and you can
it's
buy the same
exact
like if Grand Theft Auto comes out for PlayStation 3 and Xbox,
right? And you can use
you
it on Xbox.
You can resell your version for $20.
It's a good point.
Guess what I'm buying?
Yeah. Right. I think it would hurt PlayStation. Yep. I think they would alienate their audience that they should be desperate to have.
Is that a question,
Petey?
The FDA is being asked to better regulate nanotechnology. There are
already
FDA. There are over 116 nanotechnology products already on the market.
Okay.
And including things like sunscreen, makeup, things like that.
Sunscreen?
Sunscreen. There is a sunscreen.
What's nanotechnology then? Because I'm thinking robots.
Yeah.
I'm thinking swarms.
Nano nano ingredients are defined as smaller than 100 millionths of a millimeter.
Oh, nano ingredients.
Yeah. Well, nanotechnology is, you know, nano ingredients. Okay.
That's true, because they, okay, they do build these scrubs and stuff like that, which are not sand that they're using as a basis. You know, like the microderm abrasion stuff is teeny
weeny. We can shear the electrons right off your atoms with our new.
So, you know, a lot of people.
One molecule thick.
Are somewhat worried. I mean, they've had problems with nanotechnology particles in the past. I mean, people have breathed them into their lungs and had problems. So this is a new thing. It's a new question of whether or not the FDA is really going to, you know, get down on these, or they're going to wait for more studies. You know,
what they're going to wait for is a group of people who work at the FDA who knows what the hell nanotechnology is. I mean, it's probably a whole bunch of 70-year-olds sitting around going, nano what?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and then 20 years later, when we're all 70, we're going to try to start passing laws about something that's too late.
Yup.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know. It's
like judges saying, you know, we need to ban the internet. You know, you can get nudie pictures on there. And you hear these stories all the time where the judges have zero clue what they're judging on.
Yeah, or the people who judge video games for violence.
Yeah,
no
exactly.
Idea.
Yeah. So,
you know, the Pac-Man's got boobs now.
The Pac-Man.
The Pac-Man. Okay. So, anyway, yeah, it's interesting just that, you know, what's really interesting is I was just watching TV the other day, and I saw an ad. You know, and there's a guy driving along, and he's looking over, and there's a cheerleader car wash off to the right. Mm-hmm. Then there's a car wash off to the left with nuns, right?
Right.
And the nun pulls out this car wash thing and shows him what it's using, and it's a nanotechnology car wash spray, you know? Wow. And, of course, he goes over to the nuns instead of the girls. But I was like, you know, how weird that we're having nanotechnology spray on TV. You know, they're advertising this already. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
And how weird that they're using nuns as a selling point.
Yeah, I know. I think the whole point was that, you know, you'll even have nuns, you know, wash your car if it's this spray because it's so good. You know, it's so amazing for your car.
Is one Sally Field? Like the flying nun? No. Okay, never mind. Moving on.
Ba-dum-bum. So, yeah, that's... Yeah.
It's low stair day for Matt.
Yes, it is. All right, here are the hits of E3 for me. X-Steel.
Wait, this is your best of
E3? These are my best of E3. Okay. Go out, get these damn games as soon as they come out.
Yeah.
And I'll put the links on the website of these are my favorites. X-Steel. Right now it's PC only.
X-Steel?
X-Steel. E-X-T-E-E-L.
Hmm.
Right now it's PC only. It is an MMO shooter, basically. Mm-hmm. Massively multiplayer online shooter with storage on the server of your character. So basically, you can come on. You can learn how to upgrade your mech. You get more points if you win. You get less points if you lose. Obviously, mm-hmm. You can improve your mech. It is free when it's going to come out. But there will be no monthly fee. But you can buy upgrades for your armor and stuff like that, and really make them slicky cool. There'll be new
this
purchable.
Doesn't sound like
so
a
you
good
get
idea.
To be fodder unless you pay money.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There will be cool parts, cool skills, cool armor. You can upgrade.
Now,
it
could
looks
you get that
neat.
If you just worked hard?
Yes.
So you don't have to pay money if you
no.
want to grind?
No. Absolutely.
Okay. That sounds a little better. But, you know, people are really uptight about people buying into MMOs. Like, the fact that you can purchase gold gets World of Warcraft people just up in a rage. I'm like, who cares if the guy next to you purchased gold? Does that affect you? I'm like, well, you know, I'm leveling up.
Well, it actually can, because, like, you know, say
they had
I
to shut
to
down
get
one
it.
Because there was people who, so many people who purchased gold, they destabilized the economy of the region.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That happens. But also, just for example, on a smaller scale, you know, I'm playing my warrior. I've got the great, like, tier one armor. Yay, after many, many hours of struggle. I can turn around and try and get into a group for the next dungeon, but there's somebody who's just bought all the gold they need and purchased all of the tier 2 armor, and now they can get in. They have preference over me because they bought their way in.
Mm.
You know,
huh.
Okay.
Well, also, it also means that everything's more expensive because there's more gold and, you know. So when you go to buy something. But on the flip side, it means when you go to sell something, you're selling it for more money as well, too. So
we'll see. All right. What's your number one?
All right.
Now, these are the next ones. Conan, fourth quarter release this year.
It's 2.5.
So
you're into the MMOs.
Well, Conan, it looks really cool. Mm-hmm. I actually did an interview with the guy. Mm-hmm. It's going to be free if you play the first player mode. And you're going to be able to play all day long, all along you want.
Single player, right.
Single player mode is free, and that's how you're going to build up your character initially.
And you can't even get into online until you
right.
play
you it, cannot
right?
get... Yeah, exactly. You have to build up your character in this form. Once you do that, you take a boat to the continent, and you know you actually get captured as a slave at the end of the first part of it.
Oh, good. Ruined
and
it.
Then... Yeah, sorry about that. And then you're in it. Yeah, basically, it will have one life quest for each individual character. Those life quests will differ. It will be a $15 monthly fee. There is a large character variation. It's going to have a design capability a lot closer to Star Wars Galaxies than World of Warcraft in terms of being able to make your character look like anything. Hmm. Right now, there are four races. They're going to have Siege Warfare instance zones. So the Siege Warfare, you're going to have the ability to use catapults and trebuchets and go in and do
That's
all that
cool.
stuff. And the NPC cities will also have basically a time clock. And when they overload, when they basically reach to a point where the NPC cities has built up its army enough, they will attack your city. So there's a good reason to stay and, you know,
Rated,
involve yourself perfect. With your city and stuff like that. It will have a moving plot. Okami would be a really, really cool game. I was
Is
thinking
that the pinball one?
No,
That's
it's a whole
Japanese calligraphy.
So beautiful. Right.
The one we talked about last week.
I thought this was the biggest chick game
in
the entire
last
world
year, too.
Yeah, true. Last E3.
Yeah, I thought this was big it chick, didn't look like big it big chick game.
That much. As a chick.
No, it did. It evolved pretty cool in
Since
many
last
many
year?
Cool. Yeah,
it didn't look that different to me
didn't
either.
Look that
really,
far
I remember
at all.
I had the same reaction Don had, but you might
when
have
I was
seen
when I was playing
too.
The fighting and stuff like that, I was blown away by the really
I don't
cool.
Think I fought anything.
We didn't fight anything.
It's different from anything else.
Yeah, it's very quite amazing.
And can you paint well with your thumbsticks?
You can paint well with your thumbsticks. You can. They have this new thing where you're also. So
we didn't do so well. With
yeah,
painting.
But we were stupid. Yeah. We can't blame that on the game. We were just dumb.
You know? Did you do the astrology stuff where you're trying to connect the stars and stuff like that to do different
magic?
Never mind.
We had a hard
we did,
time
yeah.
painting a dot.
Well, we didn't realize it was supposed to be just a dot.
Yeah, we were trying to paint the whole dragon. We didn't realize you were just supposed to put the dot at the tip of the dragon.
The other thing is that you're now going to be able to draw the universe as well, which is really cool.
Well, that should be easy.
You come to a place and like there's no river, and you can draw a river in.
I love this.
You can draw fire and stop your people from getting in the way of you and stuff like that. Mm. So really, really neat. And finally, my pick for E3, Assassin's Creed.
Right.
Assassin's Creed is unbe-frickin'-leavable. I will put the link. Go watch the trailer. It is
well,
so
That's what
cool.
I heard, though. Is
but
it's
only
just
the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Now, no. Yeah.
You can't judge a game by its trailer.
I went in the room. And the room...
Okay.
First of all, this is the same company that does...
Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia. But also, it's Ubisoft. And Ubisoft mm-hmm. does Splinter Cell.
Mm-hmm.
They're using... Basically, they're saying with Prince of Persia, you had 400 base movements, animations for the individual character, right? With this guy, you're going to have 4,000, so he's going to move smooth. The other cool things with it is basically you have a head button, an arms button, a legs button, and an action button. Everybody is interactive with you. The crowd goes from being just basically where you interact with them and you have a fight or flight response. You're going to have a crowd that has levels of superiority, like take care of a kid, I'm thirsty, I'm hungry, I'm whatever. You can't just run through a crowd and get things done. Anything over 3 centimeters wide, you're going to be able to climb up on. It's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah, it looks cool.
To clarify that part where you were talking about, every NPC has a series of things that are priorities for them
in their life.
So like one NPC might be, you know, like they are people who are sympathetic to children. Yeah. So if there's a reason for the crowds to run, if they see a child, they will run to the child to protect the child.
Yeah.
So they all interact differently. Like if you're just walking through the crowds, they're going to do things. They're actually following tasks.
Yeah.
If someone is going to the butcher to get meat from the butcher.
Oblivion has that a little bit.
Oblivion
you
doesn't.
Can, You can follow a person's day.
Yeah, but they have a day. They have a path.
Yeah, but
they
do have a path.
But that's only specific characters for specific quests.
This will be infinite variation, and physics also are going to be a big thing. So, like, if you're playing your character and I run into a character that's the size of Don, right, I will rebound and fall to the ground, and that character might look at me and either get aggressive or start up a conversation or whatever. And your individual side quests will also affect how the overall game goes. Like, if you save a woman from, you know, being attacked at one point, her brothers later on in the game might point the guards in a different direction.
Well, you know, this is one of those games that it's you'll believe it when you see it,
right?
Type of things. It's like you've been hearing this every year since, you know. So I'm really hoping that we have the technology now to for the, you know, processors to actually do all this.
Well, the cinematic, though, everyone should see, because it really is beautiful.
The cinematic is out of control.
And we will have a link to it on our site.
Yeah.
So.
Excellent.
Okay. Hopefully.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I think we are so out of time at this point.
Yeah. We're way out of time. So, okay. Let's move on.
All right. So this week we're going to be examining comic books that are a little bit off the beaten path. Now, we're not talking about comic books that are you know, so far off the beaten path that there were 200, you know, prints that were made, and, you know, you've
no swastika girl, no strange arm man, none of those comics.
But basically, for people who were used to something like, say, you know, the basics, they know Batman, they know Superman, they know X-Men, they know things like that. These are things that are just a little further off the beaten path that they might not know about. Or if you're someone who did read in the past and hasn't kept up with some of the newer developments,
like us,
exactly.
The disclaimer here is that none of us are consistent comic book readers,
right?
And so we're talking about alternative comic books, and these are just and why we feel like they're alternative, and just or and what makes getting out of the typical genre nice. And these things that we will bring up are just examples of what we want to talk about. It's not definitive in scope here.
Well, this is by no means inclusive, and, you know, please feel free to come to our forums after the discussion and chip in your own thoughts on what other people might enjoy.
So. Yeah. Well, before we discuss the actual comics that we went over, let me ask you all. Now, everyone in this room at one point read comics.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. What was the reason why you stopped? Like, for me, it was money.
Yeah.
When I realized that one comic book cost more than Newsweek, I realized that this was something I had to stop.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, pretty much when your parents stopped, you know, giving you allowance for them, and it became you giving you allowance for them, it became a hindrance. And also time. I mean, you know, once you started, you know, once you started getting on with your life, and
it was weird. I went from comic books.
How dare you?
Is that the Castlevania theme?
It sounds like it.
I can't mute this when it starts ringing.
We just have to boogie for a little while.
Hit the end button.
Huh?
Yeah. End button.
Oh, now it sounds like Tetris.
Yeah, that's what does it. End.
Okay. All right. Anyway, I originally went from basic comics to graphic novels, and once I graduated to because I didn't want to read like the whole series, but once the series was done, I would have a good time reading the whole graphic novel. But then those got too expensive in comics.
Yeah,
they are expensive.
To me, it became repetitive storylines, really, and I kind of just got tired of it. Like, you know, it kind of seemed like the same stuff over and over and over, and maybe that's the reason why, you know, a lot of these alternative comic books started becoming more popular, because, mm-hmm. you know, back in the day, I think in running off and printing a series that only lasts 10 episodes was not feasible. You weren't going to make money. But I think people like me were like, okay, I'm kind of done with another Spider-Man villain showing up.
Yeah.
Yep.
But that's because you weren't reading the alternative comics. See,
apparently.
For me, it was X-Men and Justice League. Those were kind of the two staples for me growing up, that and Teen Titans, right?
Yeah, Justice League was big.
And they kind of aged with me, right? They kind of got older and more serious as I went on. But then there was a reset point on all of them, right?
Like, I think everyone does that.
Yeah, that was weird, where suddenly it was like, that happened with Spider-Man for me.
Yeah.
Happened to Superman, happened with Spider-Man. I mean, they killed Superman.
That was awesome.
Yeah. They killed him and turned him into Shaquille O'Neal or whatever that character was.
But I think for me, I gave up. Like, I remember I quit X-Men series when it seemed like the X-Men series was no longer about the characters I knew and were about these new characters they'd introduced that really had nothing to do. I had no interest in them, you know?
Was that the Spike years?
Yes.
They had Spike and Cannonball.
Spike and Arrow.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Spike?
Well, was he the one who had spikes protruding out of him? And
no, Marrow. Marrow was the one who could rip her bones off her body and throw them at people.
I'm thinking young African-American kid, cousin to Storm, whatever, Thorn.
He's in the movie.
He was made up for the cartoon.
Ah.
Mm. He's in the movie,
but
right?
I don't
know. The porcupine guy?
Wasn't there a maggot at some point?
Yes, they made up a maggot. That's when I was like, oh, jump the shark, done.
Wait a minute, wait. They made a superhero whose abilities were based off a maggot?
It was to technologically control two robo-maggots that followed him around and would eat things.
Okay, all right. So maybe this is a good reason why heading toward alternative franchises are... Well, that's interesting. Actually, some of these, the books, you know, that we have here aren't particularly franchises. They're like one-run series.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
well, it's
kind of
like The Watchmen.
It up.
You know, The Watchmen is sort of the icon of this genre, is this short book.
The first big indie.
Yeah.
It's kind of
the
pulp.
Well, it's very much the pulp fiction of this genre.
But you know, the ability to have, you know, I think that's what's intriguing about a lot of these. The ability to be able to end it gives you a lot more freedom with the dramatic moments. I mean, you can kill off your characters at the end if you want to. You can make them martyrs. You can, you know, do whatever you want. You can kill off the bad guys instead of being dainty about it because you know you need to write them back in a year from now. I mean,
what was interesting is that this had an effect on mainstream comics, and mainstream comics started creating alternate universes where they could kill off their characters and their bad guys and stuff like that to a greater or lesser effect.
Right.
And what Watchmen really did was made comics adult, like really mature, complicated.
That and The Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
Those were definitely
the two.
Yeah.
Which I read
for those
in
of
high
you
school.
Who haven't read Watchmen or Dark Knight Returns, we recommend them.
Those
should
reads.
Be way up, way high on your list.
Yeah,
they're classics. Watch
I think Time Magazine recently picked their top 100 modern American books, and The Watchmen was actually on that.
Really?
So
that is correct.
So why don't we jump into some of the comics and review them?
Okay.
Why don't we start off with 100 Bullets? Okay.
Okay.
And let's just start by giving sort of a what this is about. I mean, 100 Bullets is about basically, the basic concept is, there's a guy who shows up, he gives you a briefcase filled with a gun and 100 untraceable bullets that you can use however you want. You can kill anyone you want, and he tells you that whatever you do with this gun, no one will ever be able to trace it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's about, you know, it's about these individual people's choices about how they deal with these bullets. Now, on top of that, there's a part in here that Aaron will really like, which is there's sort of a conspiracy theory or conspiracy story in it, too, in the sense that there is a group of people who are running the entire world. And they've had these people who were called the Minutemen that worked underneath them, who were their enforcers forever.
Right.
And the guy who is the guy giving out the bullets was basically the head of the Minutemen, and there was some sort of schism, and now he's at war with his old masters.
Right.
Okay.
Now, what
Cylon
I noticed when I read this was that basically this reminded me so much of a Twilight Zone episode, and then that sort of extrapolated out into realizing that a lot of these feel like Twilight Zone episodes to me.
A lot of the Vertigo line felt like Twilight Zone episodes to me.
Is they, yeah. They sort of felt
it's like
these...
what would you do if someone...
Exactly.
You know, could stop time or 100 bullets in a gun. Or,
exactly.
You know,
and you have these sort of linked characters, and they all have supernatural abilities, but it's within this sort of slightly askew universe.
Mm-hmm. Right. So why is this considered, in your opinion, a deviation from your typical superhero?
Well, first of all, there are no superheroes in this film,
mm-hmm.
or in this film,
comic.
In this comic. You know, no one has unusual or unreal powers. I mean, you know, if they have any abilities, their abilities are, you know, that they're great warriors or something. You know, they're good with a gun, but that's about it.
Well, the first power is they have the freedom of not being caught, which is...
Yeah, but that's not really a superpower per se, you know. And so it's interesting. This actually reminds me a lot of the comic Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know.
It looks like it.
It looks like it.
It looks like it stylistically. I mean, you would almost think it was written by...
But it's not a noir. Like, it's not hard-boiled. I think my favorite thing about 100 Bullets is that it is urban. It's, like, on the streets. And it's real. And that is so different than what you're used to seeing in comic books. And so the gritty style is reflective of the gritty urban, you know, street life, which I think is kind of unique.
Yeah.
And so it's cool to have a Twilight Zone-y, really interesting, dark conspiracy, but set in this totally urban environment.
Well, it's interesting that they've given, there was a kind of a caricature quality to, you know, the people are extra ugly, they're extra hairy. The, you know, well, of course, the women are always
which is,
extra
which is very sensitive, you know.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Like, they're saying, they're commenting on the type of character by making them extremely, you know, so whatever,
right,
visually.
Well, I got to say, I actually really liked the comic. I'm curious to see what other people thought. I mean, you know, I actually got really upset at the end of one comic because when I really liked one, you know, one of the characters who passed.
Yeah,
you know,
I only read the one, but I was really into it. And
that one never made it back to me.
Yeah, that way. I just got to say, I highly recommend this one. I think it's really interesting. It's very unusual.
Now, how many books are in that? I mean, those are bundled in graphic novels. Is that how they came out?
No, they're still coming out in issues.
Oh, they are.
Right now. In fact, I think they're almost.
So that's a franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still going right now. You can still get them.
And the premise is still 100
No,
bullets?
That's. Well, yes, but that was sort of the platform that it jumped off. And now it's a much deeper.
But
you know,
there's an underlying storyline that is very compelling. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and I mean, just to figure out what's going on, who the Minutemen are, why, you know, what went down, mm-hmm. who their bosses are, to watch this war happening, it is fascinating. It's really interesting. So
interesting.
And then to find out, like, the other part about it is, oftentimes to find out, is this one of the times when he gives the, you know, the gun to someone, that it's going to relate to the storyline, and that somehow these people are going to have something to do with it, or is it just going to be a random event somehow? I mean, it's just interesting.
What was interesting to me reading, I didn't read 100 Bullets, but reading like Sin City is a great mm-hmm. example of this, and some of the other ones that we had on here. Comics seem to be very similar to movies to me, in that they're a very visual medium, right? But the difference between them and movies, it seems like comic books are a medium specifically for the cinematographer and the writer only, where their vision is completely undiluted by actors or costumers or lighting directors. It's, you know, it's like the whole idea of, like, you know, have
as pretty as you want it to be and as pithy as you want it to be, I suppose.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the whole idea of, like, when you have a script written by one or two people, it's so much more pure than when you have 8 to 12 writers working on the same script. With a lot of these things, it was clearly the vision of 1 to 3 people, you know? Mm-hmm. And for good or bad, for some of these, I was like, ooh, you could have used some help, you know?
You know, it's interesting because I actually just want to comment on, you know, sometimes when you have, you know, these 20 writers, it's very awful, a la Catwoman. You know, there's a lot of examples of things that just never came together. But actually, there are a lot of things that were put together by a lot of people, you know, where they had like 20 writers. The thing that, you know, I think
or
is...
Or 5.
Or whatever. Yeah, you know, 25 or 5 or 3. You know, they just have to have, I think, someone with a clear vision towards the end of the process.
Yeah, unity of purpose.
Together,
exactly.
Know?
What was that comic that we sat in on that little panel where they had like 15 writers and remember that?
Yeah, that
was there.
It's called like Superman Batman 26 or something. I can't remember what it's called, but it's about it was that very special issue. It had like all the luminaries from the comic book world writing.
Yeah, we'll have to look it up, but yeah. They got to raise money
Superman,
for
Batman.
A foundation, a whole bunch of
the writer Jeff Loeb. It's kind of in honor of his son who passed.
Right. But that was interesting. They had so many people involved in one comic all coming together to put a vision together. And interesting. See if it, you know, sells well. All right. So let's move on.
Let's move on. The Authority. Did all of us read this?
I didn't.
I really dug it. I really, really dug this series. I know, Aaron, you just were like, yeah.
Oh, yes. The Authority. I did start. Yeah. Eh.
Yeah, I mean, I just dug their powers. I thought the idea of having Jenny Sparks as a sort of lead character who's the incarnation of the 20th century.
I didn't even get that. Like, I don't even know what that means. I was like, I was trying to figure out what that means.
She's the incarnation of the 20th century. She's interacted and put everybody, like if she talked to Martin Luther King, she would head him off on the idea of you know, peace.
But she was the one who was like talking to cities and stuff like that.
No, that's another character. So you didn't actually
like,
read the comic. If you read the comic, then that's what
their powers were like. so bizarre. I was like, I don't even
realize. Well,
like,
so Aaron, you didn't even realize that the two guys were gay.
Well, I didn't. When they started making out, I figured it
well,
out.
One, yeah, of, the, one of the things about this series liked that each other a lot is it's the first superhero comic that had an ongoing main character, two main characters that were gay.
Yeah.
Right?
And who are Batman wannabe and a Superman wannabe.
Yeah.
You know, but I thought more interesting than that, actually, were some of the basic ideas for characters.
Yes.
You know, there is a character in there whose power is he synchronizes with the city,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So the healthier that city is, the more powerful he is. So there was a scene where, like, he goes to, quote-unquote, New York at 9/11, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he starts falling apart physically.
Yeah.
Cracks start opening his skin. He starts bleeding, you know? It's an interesting concept. But they also had a couple people, they're like,
Japanese-y.
Blue Jay woman who could fly around and shoot things. I don't remember her
power. Right. Well, yeah, but she was kind of like Hawk Girl more than anything else.
Honestly, though, it seemed like a political superhero comic.
Well,
the depth for me didn't go that much farther than that.
It was very political. What I liked is sort of the way they dealt with certain of their powers. Like, one of the characters is very Batman-like.
Yeah.
But his... one of the things that they've said about him is that he has the ability to suss out what anyone's weakness is and beat him. Right, and they have this one portion where he just gets the crap beaten out of him, and this guy's about to end it for him, and he looks up at the guy, and he's like, "You probably don't even know your last name." And the guy's like, "What?" And he just says, "You know, you've probably been working this job for 20 years. You were a kid," and he just sort of psychologically gets inside this guy's head, and he goes, "You know, you should find a family." And the guy, and the superhero is about to end him, just walks away because he's just crying and weeping. And that just cracked me up that they sort of turned the idea of Batman on his head and went with it that way.
But one of the things that was really intriguing about this series is the concept, and I'm not sure if it entirely comes through in these. In the samples that we had, but one of the concepts was, what if you really had the powers of Superman? I mean, what would you do?
So, and you were gay.
And you were gay. So, no, what if you really had the powers of Superman? You had the power to stop injustice. And so basically these guys get together and said, you know, we're sick and tired of how the world works.
We are the authority.
We are the authority. They go over to, like, you know, Mogadishu, where there's some warlord who's, you know, killing all these people.
Mm-hmm.
They grab the dude out of his palace. They bring him out to where, like, you know, these people have been having their hands cut off. And they drop him there so that they can have just some good old-fashioned, you know, justice happen.
Right.
In front. And it's like that. And that's how it starts off. Now, that was really great, and I really like the stuff where they do stuff like that, and they're intrigued.
So I read the one where, like, some random guy just wanted to start blowing up cities for no reason.
Now, there's a downside to this comic, too, which you're getting to, which is sometimes it's a little thin. I mean, like, I got to say that sometimes the writing's a little thin. Sometimes, you know, there's a villain who, I mean...
Well, part of the writing problem is that their powers are so bizarre, and their modes of transportation are so bizarre that everyone talks in this exposition to try to tell you what's going on. You know, it was like the old Super Friends cartoon. It was like, you know, I better reach for my utility belt and pull out this certain thing. Otherwise, the train momentarily, you know, I'm like, okay, if you have to explain to me the technology.
See, Aaron, you wanted a good old-fashioned origin story there, didn't you?
Well, I needed...
Oh.
This is one of the... No, I just wanted them, you know... Yeah, I guess what I needed is more comic book to get into it instead of it having to, you know...
Right.
It was so kind of...
But
complex.
You started late in the series. You never got anyone where explained what they were all about. Or...
Well, but they were trying to.
Right.
So, this is a spaceship that is trans-dimensional and we can pull
right.
out... I mean...
But they do that in the beginning of Lost, you know, last week on Lost, and they'll go, you know, the entire series.
I guess my problem with it, as far as the politics goes, was that their answers were actually fairly simplistic for most
yes.
things.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, in your example, that's great. That's a great story. I love to see, like, Saddam Hussein dropped in the middle of an angry mob that wants to rip him apart.
But
it doesn't really solve any problems, you know?
Well, it starts off great. I think it kind of got a little weird as it goes along.
Yeah,
you know?
I tend to agree.
So I was intrigued by it. I think it was really interesting. I think it's a neat thing to start off with. I don't know if it's got staying power, but it's well worth looking at.
Yeah. It does have staying power. It's still publishing now.
No. By staying power, I mean, you know, right. just because something's – there's a lot of things that are publishing, but I'm not reading them.
Aaron, did you ever see what the actual storyline of the guy who could bond with cities was?
Mm-mm.
He was an alien abductee. And for years and years and years, he would have these weird things. And eventually, the government found out that he was an alien abductee. And when they went in and examined this kid, they found out that none of his humanness was left. And he was just weird thing on the inside. And what it was that these aliens were literally designing him so that when we finally did get attacked by this gigantic thing, he bonded with the city, and the city actually became a gigantic battle suit around him and allowed him to beat off the aliens.
And once he beat them off, they became placid, rolled over, and fell asleep.
Yes.
You know, okay. I'm just trying to, like, imagine a
I think
city
a comic that might have approached it a little more solidly was Rising Stars,
yeah.
written by J. Michael Straczynski, which I hold in my hot little hand right now. It was a two-part comic, as far as a two-part collection that we have so far. I don't know if there are more.
Actually, it finished kind of recently.
Okay.
It actually finished.
Did it finish?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was like, hey, what's going on?
There's spin-offs that are still publishing now. I think there's one called, like, Untouchables. I haven't read it.
I'd be interested in reading those.
But yeah. But how far did you get in this? Because it goes in a big direction.
I finished this and the second one. To describe the story arc to people, long story short, 113 children are changed when a flash of light goes over their small town.
Right.
They all receive different superpowers, right? Some get kind of Superman-type powers. Some get powers as obscure as, like, dreamwalking, right?
So there's just powers. Some have cure. Some know that they have powers but don't know how to use them.
Right. Right. That whole thing.
Some get powers as weak as I can move a leaf with my brain.
Right.
But that's it. Nothing heavier.
You know, so the government rounds them all up. There's some legal action. Parents manage to hold on to the kids, but the kids get trained by the government. Some become superheroes, some merge with society. They all kind of find their own lives until someone starts killing them off one by one many years later. And they find that every time one of them dies, the rest of them get a little stronger. Right?
There can be only one.
So that's kind of where it was going, yeah.
Not blowing the plot, you know. They resolve that situation. The murderer is taken care of. And the remainder decide, you know what, look at the powers we were given. Some of us are built, you know, invulnerable, able to withstand massive pressures, as though maybe, you know, we were supposed to be doing something underground or working under the sea. You know, some of us have these powers that could be used to better mankind if we were cooperating.
Like Leaf Blower Man.
Yeah, and even the most trivial of these powers, like there's a character who has the ability to, like, sing to people telepathically. They start realizing this was a person who might be able to coordinate us, you know, the central control system, the central operator, so we were always in touch with each other. And so they decide, we were probably supposed to make the world a better place, and we screwed it up. So the survivors get together and decide to improve the world.
And okay. It's now really...
In a much... I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I found that one really intriguing and well-written.
You know? I did too. I mean, it's J. Michael Straczynski, and y'all know I'm a big old fanboy for Babylon 5, which is what he wrote.
Right. Now, he was the guy that, when he walked in on Babylon 5, he knew the entire five-year, everything that was going to happen. Is that correct?
And Babylon 5 was his baby, yes.
And they said it was impossible for him to do that. The people who talked about the series said, there is no way you're ever going to be able to do what you have in mind, period.
Yeah.
And he did it.
Yeah.
So.
But was one thing that I found very interesting, I was talking to Lisa about this before the show. There are story elements in Babylon 5 that he was forced to drop because of changes in casting and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. He did them in this comic book. The character you're talking about, Lu'u, able to move small things with her mind, mm-hmm. like a leaf or something. Yeah. That's a direct lift from Babylon 5.
Oh.
The quote they use in the first comic book to describe her is lifted directly from Babylon 5.
Oh, really? What was the quote?
You know,
something like, you're back from Babylon 5.
She can only move small things. How, you know, how important could that be? You know, why in the world did the FBI hire this woman?
Oh, but
think about the small things that you could move,
like
such
closing,
as someone's carotid
yeah.
artery. You know, yeah. it only takes a couple ounces of pressure to do that, and they'll be dead in moments, and no one will ever know. That's a direct quote from Babylon
yeah.
5.
Yeah.
Oh.
A major character in Babylon 5 was given that small power.
Oh.
And so I was always curious what he intended to do with that, and this comic book answered that question.
Right.
Hmm.
So they can move something very small. Okay, I'll read it.
Only small things. I don't want to... Okay. I mean, it's kind of a... beautiful, miraculous moment in the second comic.
Huh.
Now, the what second make, collection, rather.
So this has got superheroes in it. In fact, the one that you brought up, Matt, has superheroes.
That's why I brought them up.
What brings these out of the realm of just being the Fantastic Four or Justice League?
They are, even within the Marvel Universe, which basically took the DC Universe and said, hey, what would happen if just they Peter Parker? Human. What would happen if they were just human?
Right.
Not only are these human, not only do they have a tragic flaw, but they're more flawed and they're more tragic.
I would actually say they're presented less as being superheroes.
Right.
They're people with extraordinary abilities who did not choose to be heroic with them.
Well, and do not live in a world with supervillains. They don't live in a world of superheroes. Yeah. But they also look at the first that have ever been like this.
But so. They also look at the realism of it, like the invulnerable guy who just he's the first one to die. I thought that was incredibly depressing. He's this big guy. He's invulnerable, but he also can't feel anything. Mm-hmm. So he can never have relationships. Having sex with people just doesn't provide. The only thing that he can do is eat.
Yeah, and he's not super strong. He's just
invulnerable. Yeah. Period.
The stories of when they're children I thought were really compelling because they're totally realistic. They're like teenagers struggling with their powers and, you know, being alienated from society. And it was really touching.
One kid who glows and flies, but that's his entire ability. And so his dad, who's an evangelical Christian, basically says, you know, we're glad our kid's a sign of the second coming. And so he uses him to promote his church. And
What was that series called?
Rising Stars.
Rising Stars. J. Michael Straczynski. Quite good.
It's really good and political, ultimately.
It was political, ultimately. And I thought the reason why I brought that up immediately after The Authority is I thought the politics were better done. It's fewer black and white. The government isn't evil. They're just trying to figure out everything the same way as everyone else.
Yeah.
Flip side of that is Marvel's Runaways.
I didn't like that one at all.
I have to agree, actually. But you actually kind of dug it in some ways, didn't you?
I enjoyed it as a complete fluff piece. This was the WB of the comics.
Yeah,
it's really targeted to younger people.
I like Smallville.
That is true. It is targeted to young adults.
Smallville. It's like the OC. More than anything else.
This might be great for young kids. I mean,
it's like
really,
the Goosebumps of...
It's for teenagers.
It is. That is actually a great analogy. Yeah. It is maybe not quite Goosebumps level, maybe a little higher, but it's right in that area.
Hmm.
And do you want to talk about the concept of what this is about, Don?
The concept of Runaways is that it's five children, seven children, six children, some number of children. They all discover their parents are different supervillains. Some of them are time traveler supervillains. Some of them are magical supervillains. Some of them are psionic supervillains. And they've all gotten together.
Aliens.
Some of them, they've all gotten together for some mysterious goal. And
supervillains do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They see that their parents are slaughtering and sacrificing this girl in some satanic ritual. and decide, you know, okay, our parents seem to be really more fucked up than we ever really guessed. So let's run away and fight our parents.
That's kind of interesting.
It's kind of a teen uprising rebellion thing against the parents, but with a twist that is revealed at the end.
Yes.
And nothing is exactly as it appeared to be.
And
they deal with a lot of kind of interesting kind of teeny issues.
Mm-hmm.
Body image stuff was brought up with one of the characters who's like, there was a line they never really addressed that, like, being the fat kid, it really keyed into me. There's a fat girl whose only power is her parents are time travelers, and they bought her a big lizard, right, that really likes her. And one of the other parents has finally caught them, and she's trying to contain them all. And the girl sticks her lizard on the alien parent, and the parent says, you were always the fat, weak one. We always considered you the most expendable, and you would come after me, and just puts her down. Right? And, like, that was a really kind of a... That's something. And the comic didn't really touch it after that, but...
Hey, maybe she shouldn't have worn the spandex with the cape.
But teen sexuality, dealing with parental issues, dealing with, you know, feelings of being outcast, feelings of being the popular one. It covered a lot of ground for what it was.
Right.
You know?
Interesting.
Oh, and I have to say about Runaways, that series that you read has just been not rebooted, but reintroduced from number one again by Marvel. So now it's become like a mainstream one, kind of like how Powers got reborn.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of Powers.
So it's still going.
It up,
Well, we got some other stuff.
Let's finish.
And another thing, sorry, about Runaways is that it's written by one of my favorite comic writers, which is Brian K. Vaughan, who also writes Why the Last Man and the political one, Ex Machina.
Well,
which are great and still out there.
We need you here.
No, you don't.
I wanted to say that... that it's such an interesting concept they did with Runaways, and it was so intriguing because of the concept. And it was just the things like the satanic ritual and the sacrifice of the girl that were just so kind of bizarre that threw it. And the ultimate kind of like what they're doing this all for was just – it just kind of
– I had a problem with it because it was so
thin. I remember Teen Titans when I was a kid that dealt with a lot of the same stuff. Anyone remember Power Pack from when we were really
no.
little?
Yes.
It's – some similar stuff there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I read this, at least the first part of, at least the first book in the series of, what's called Ocean? Ocean?
It was a one-shot.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, they've got, it was a one-shot. So there is no, it feels like it needed to continue because it was just so, it was like a scene from a comic.
It felt like a short story.
Yeah,
and the payoff wasn't sufficient for me to feel like there was closure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was relatively, you know, big graphic novel. I mean, I can't imagine them stringing that out for like 6 books because, you know, they have a lot of banter that would go on for 2 pages.
Yeah.
About coffee. And I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Like, that's a one panel. Like, banter is one panel.
That depends on your tastes. Like, for me, I actually enjoyed that more than, the plot. Because I found the plot really kind of annoying in that.
I mean, literally, there's a coffee scene that's, like, 2 pages. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. This joke is not funny enough for 2 pages. I mean, we gotta get off this coffee thing. And I'm sitting there looking at the book and go, okay, 2 of these pages is about coffee. Like, where are we going with this plot? But there was kind of it's a science fiction piece where... this man who is a weapons inspector gets flown out to Jupiter to one of the moons because underneath the ice of one of the moons is some frozen coffins of billion-year-old coffins.
Hundreds of thousands of them.
And a weapon system, a giant weapon system. And these scientists are out there. They stumbled upon it, and he was sent out there to figure out what it is. So he figures out, yes, it is indeed a big weapon system, and everybody starts waking up, and things start activating, and they've got to deal with
it. And there's a rival company that's out there, like a that is
like a corporate company.
Out here on this planet where it's only the two of them can arrange for an accident and maybe steal the technology, and so it gets kind of,
it could be complex, but then it never does.
It never actually quite goes as far. I mean, it starts off and it's a little intriguing. I kind of probably, I was like,
it just never really goes anywhere. It's one of those books where I was thinking, wow, I wonder where this series is going to go because the last couple pages ended it. I mean, there is no possibility.
I got to say, though, the writer there, what's the writer's name?
Warren Ellis.
He's really interesting. Some of the other stuff he did.
He's a visionary, a good futurist visionary. Like, all his comics have amazing sort of creative ideas of what the future is going to be like.
Tell me if I'm wrong. Did he write
this
Preacher?
Is this the coffee scene that you're having a problem with?
Who did Preacher?
He might have. We'll have to look into it.
Is there two or three pages of it?
He's written a lot of great ones, Warren Ellis.
Toward the beginning when he first comes on.
He's one of those people,
station.
Like, I can never remember what he did, but I always know if his name's on it. It'll at least be interesting.
He's prolific. Yeah. He's written a lot. Did you guys read Global Frequency?
Global Frequency, no.
No, we didn't read that one.
It's a 12 issue. It's great.
You told us not to read it until we got the first one. We never could quite
you were supposed
get,
to get it.
It's my fault. She's strangling me.
Well, I see Lisa has something in her lap right now.
Oh, has everybody read Top 10?
Top 10, no.
Well, you guys just dive right in because I can't say enough about this.
Yeah, I adored Top 10.
I really
It'll
clicked
ruin
with Top
you
10.
For other comics, if you read this
but
first.
But it's Alan Moore. I always like Alan Moore.
Why did they not do any more of them?
I know. Doesn't it kill you? There are some limited series, again, like spinoffs. There's one other book that has come out recently called The 49ers, which my sister read. She said it was great.
So what's the concept of Top 10 by Alan Moore?
Top 10 had me from the first panel, which starts off on a subway, and I believe, and it's very normal subway, and it's sort of normal people on it, and then suddenly superheroes get on.
Everyone's a superhero.
And
that's the concept.
Everyone's a superhero. And
every man, woman, and child, and the names they give their children are superhero names.
Right. And it's about Top 10, which is literally what they call this precinct, this police precinct.
Who has to deal with...
That polices this superhero city. And it's brilliant.
Everybody who lives on this planet or Earth or whatever it is, everybody has a superpower.
Everybody has a superhero.
And they all have a super costume.
No, and specifically, they're superheroes.
Yeah.
All of them have the costume. No matter how lame the costume is, they've got
No matter how lame the power is.
Yeah. Right. And in fact, Matt and I, I don't know about Tom, but Matt and I thought that this was our pick of
genius.
All of them. We thought it was great. Don, did you have that reaction, or was there anything that you responded to better?
No, I'm in agreement. Top 10 was probably the best of the ones that I read.
It's endlessly inventive. It has great character. It's so full of ideas.
It had a great sense of humor.
Yes.
And it had a great sense of drama.
Godzilla.
I felt more moved by that than I did by any of the others.
Yeah, really? Godzilla is an abusive parent. And has a kid who's a drunk.
Godzuki?
Yeah, kind of. Godzuki's a little drunk. And, Godzilla has done a bunch of, Japanese movies and made a bunch of loot. And so the kid sort of got a bunch of money but is now in a gang and asses off to everybody all the time. And, so he has to get taken in. And then
it was really good.
Then mom comes
but there's
in.
But there's also an episode that issue where a flying car gets hit by
a teleportation accident.
A teleportation accident. And they get merged together, right? And so the entire course of the episode is this gigantic wise being and like a little Jewish accountant type guy merged together at the hip and both of them dying. And
yeah, it's horrifying.
The conversations they have during that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the little Jewish guy's wife has already died.
Yeah.
And so he's just completely broken up by it.
Mm-hmm.
And the giant wise being is basically just commenting on him and the time that they have left. It's very touching. It's very interesting.
Yes.
I mean, they have this weird relationship between the lieutenant, who's a dog, a Doberman Pinscher who can talk.
And who has a bionic skeleton, like a human, so he can move around.
Right.
Of course.
You know.
And so inventive.
One other superhero falls in love with him, or actually falls in attraction with him. And he's like, I don't want to go on a date just because you're into freaky stuff. That's not my thing.
I'm not
that way. I got burned. So,
right. And it was really, you really care about these
people.
It's really weird because I'm kind of getting we're talking about him and I'm like, oh yeah, I really cared about him. It's weird that you have that reaction to a comic, and I think that's why we're all so passionate about it.
There's a character in there named Irmageddon, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who is this big, surly, not attractive, older cop, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the series, I really just dug her. I was like,
oh, yeah,
you know, you felt bad for her when she goes through these things.
Or absolutely.
You felt good for her when she wins.
What about the robot cop who joins the team and he's totally ostracized by the other
cops? Yeah, that's the other thing is that
they set up racism.
They set up racism.
Second-class citizens who are the robots.
The robots are the second-class, and they're all clickers.
Yeah,
and so everybody's like, damn, clicker.
It's a partner of the clicker, and that sucks.
Yeah, and clicker music and stuff like that.
And the robot is the one with the best sense of humor in the whole comic.
And it's totally endearing.
Yeah, just
totally endearing.
And he's very dry, and he's the best cop.
Yeah.
By far.
It's so great.
All right.
And what about Toy Box? The weapons of toys.
I got to say, that was so interesting. Toy Box is one of the main characters of the story. And when I saw her powers, I was really not impressed.
I was like, you got lame powers. Yeah. You got a gift from your dad, and that's your power?
Yeah. She's got a gift from her dad of toys that do her bidding.
Yeah.
You know, and yet she was so interesting by the end. It was just like, wow.
Yeah. Well, she was smart about them, too.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah. So let's move on. Matt, you wanted to talk about powers.
Powers is the logical choice to follow up.
Yeah.
Because truthfully, when I picked up Powers, I picked up Powers immediately after finishing Top 10, right? And it's a cop drama in a superhero world. And for a little while, it actually took me a little while to realize I was reading a different series, even though the art was different.
Mm-hmm.
So the world's filled with superheroes.
It's not.
Oh, it's not.
But it took me a little while to make that realization.
But it's not all superheroes.
But it's also cops who monitor the superheroes.
No, okay. I'm not sure we started off. Did we start off with the very first one, or did we jump right into the middle?
No, I started off with the first one. I started with the first one,
moved on to the second one, and then the next one I had was in the middle.
Yeah, right. Okay. It's very there's a mystery of one of the characters or of the lead character.
With Rising Stars, I read book two first because I didn't know it was book two.
Oh, no.
And I was so angry when I reached the end of it because I'm like, what a piece of crap. Like, they just assumed you'd know everyone, you know? Like, but okay, Powers. But,
yeah, so you guys, tell us about Powers.
Powers.
What's it about?
Go down.
Okay, Powers is about a cop team. What do you call them? Partners.
Right? Cop partners.
A woman and a guy who are the first book deals with them investigating the murder of Retro Girl, who is the big kind of Superman character of that universe.
Well, yes. Wonder Superman. Woman.
Yeah,
same type of thing.
It's the character that everyone loved and looked up to.
And should be basically almost invulnerable.
Right. And over the course of the investigation, you see a lot of characters, you see a lot of elements of the world that come into play farther down the long after this storyline is finished.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for setting things up farther down the line. Always wins me over. But long story short, the male partner is an ex-superhero who lost his powers, right?
Mm. So and now
he has a unique in to the world of superheroes because they all know him, right?
His partner, they also sort of pity him.
Right, exactly. He's the cop who got, like, kicked off, you know, the force in a way. Like, he's not in their group anymore.
Exactly.
And it's a great
burnout
mystery about what happened to him because he won't talk about it. And you're so curious.
And the comic I read that's in the middle of the storyline actually talks about his past.
Yeah.
And it is not what you think it is.
Yeah.
It is quite an interesting origin story. I was very impressed.
And it's a long origin story.
And it changes your whole understanding.
This is
of
the
him.
First one that sounds interesting to me.
Oh, you got it.
This is by Brian Michael Bendis, who I got to tell you is just, he is a phenomenon. He is amazing. He writes The Ultimate Spider-Man, which is great, reinventing the whole Spider-Man myth. From the point of view, what if you really were 14 years old and got Spider-Man powers? Yeah, 14, 15. He's great. He also wrote a comic, and I wish I could remember the
name.
Isn't
that the one where Aunt May's a much more of a –
she's hot.
No.
She's not hot as much as like
– But she's
actually – don't take no guff.
Well, actually, she's terrified of superheroes. She hates Spider-Man. She's – because – I mean, she's got this whole thing where she's completely creeped out by the super. I mean, it's really he really goes in and it manages to find the heart and soul of characters. Mm. He also wrote a fantastic sort of look at the film industry based on, and I wish I could remember the name of it off the top of my head, but I can't. Fortune and Glory.
Oh, right.
where
it's a true life story about himself.
It's a true story about his experiences after he wrote a comic book that was a graphic novel, true crime type thing, and the film industry brought him out here to kind of court him a little bit
slash torture.
And my favorite part about it is that the only people, everyone in the film industry always has their eyes closed and big smiles on their faces when they're talking,
right.
And the only people that have their eyes open are like real people,
right.
You know. And the other part about it is there's this great part where like this guy calls him and goes, who are you? Who
Why'd
the fuck
you call
are you?
Me?
Why'd you call me? What's it, and he goes, I don't know. You called me. You know, it's like, why am I talking to you?
My favorite one in that is he doesn't understand how to write a screenplay. And he's like, what do you mean 216 pages is too long?
Yeah.
You know, so
it's so self-effacing, too.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Absolutely.
In Powers, he's not just a cop for regular crimes. He's only Powers-related crimes.
Right.
Yeah.
Only superhero-related crimes, and that's what makes it so interesting.
Right.
You know, crimes that have to do with superheroes in some way.
It's like special victims units. They only focus on that one.
Only exactly. One, and it's so intriguing, the stuff they come up with. I just
I remember a storyline where powers were made illegal, right? You had to register. If I remember right, this was this comic.
Mm-hmm.
And some people had powers from magical objects, right?
And they didn't know that.
They registered, and they had to stop using them. So one of the storylines is a guy had the object and decided, I can't use it anymore. It's really no good to me. So he sells it on eBay.
Right.
And he didn't know that you had to tell the government when you do that. Uh-huh. Right. And so it starts this whole chain of events. And it was really interestingly done. You know?
That actually sounds interesting.
Yeah.
It's one to be honest, I kind of flipped through a couple of these. I started reading a couple of stuff. I started Marvels, which looked the most interesting to me because it looked like a history of the Marvel comics written in as a story.
Which it is.
So each it's a comic that goes through the introduces each of the heroes as they appeared. Actually, as they were invented.
Yeah. Who's that artist? Didn't he also do The Hope and
It's the guy who did he has a great style where the superhero costumes actually look like they're made out of cloth, they wrinkle and so they're not spray painted on. I mean, they look like real people, but it all takes place through the eyes of a reporter and just the public, how they view superheroes and when they when they get introduced, what they view the superheroes' lives and their battles and all that,
right.
Which is interesting, but I don't know. It just kind of got repetitive in the way they introduced.
For me, since I read a lot of those comics growing up, I felt an incredible connection to that comic.
Absolutely.
Well, I always had this feeling that because I didn't read enough, like they were talking about stories that I should have known. Like, a battle would go on and you'd see a glimpse of it. And I was always thinking, man, I bet comic book readers know exactly what that battle was all about.
I only remember one specific instance where that was the case.
Where,
it was the
Submariner and so-and-so fighting.
No, because those things happened a lot. Like, Atlantis attacked New York all the time, That's not really unique.
I thought Submariner was a good guy.
The one thing... the one thing that really stood out for me in that, as far as, a specific event that he was pointing at in Marvels, is in the episode, the issue called The Day Gwen Stacy Died, right? Mm. I don't know if you made it to that part.
I don't know if I did.
Gwen Stacy to... maybe I'm getting a little, scholarly here. But the Silver Age of comics, a lot of people point to the death of Gwen Stacy in the Spider-Man comic as the official
turning point.
The Silver Age, right?
Okay.
And in this comic, in Marvel's, he's doing an investigation on Spider-Man. He's trying to find out all he can. Mm-hmm. And this girl, Gwen Stacy, is seen with him a lot. So you follow him around as he talks to this girl, and you find, it's really kind of a character study on this woman who dies. In the Spider-Man movie, when he throws Mary Jane Watson off the bridge, that's the death of Gwen Stacy.
That was a direct quote of the death of Gwen Stacy.
Difference being, in the Spider-Man comic, he failed. He didn't rescue her. He shoots the webbing, catches her foot, but the momentum, she's already going too quick.
And it snaps her neck.
When he pulls it up, it snaps her neck.
Wow. Yeah.
And the comic just does it beautifully.
Is that when everyone simply start banning comic books and everything? Which was...
I'm not sure if that happened before or after the seal of comic approval.
I mean, that's kind of like the... Isn't that the reason why the Silver Age turned? Is because
possibly. I don't know the censorship issues on that. But that was definitely... That was probably the first death of a love interest in a comic book.
Yeah. That must have been big shocking time. At the time.
Well, oh, yeah,
anyway,
it was shocking.
I think anybody who's... Anybody who's a fan of the Marvel comics in general, I think, would like that more. Mm-hmm.
It's sort of the Marvel equivalent to Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
Right. Kingdom Come is thinking more of the future, though. It's a supposition type thing.
I don't know.
Same artist.
No, I think that...
it is the same artist.
That was more of a nostalgia type of thing for me, whereas Kingdom Come had a real story to it. It pushed things forward.
I really love Kingdom Come. I mean, I actually bought that, and I don't buy comic books, but you know.
Well,
I just like Superman, his grizzled, old, pissed-off superhero.
So we're speaking of Kingdom Come now at this point. But shall we? Do you want to say anything more about that?
Well, I think we should. We're always going to come back to as we read more series. We're going to probably come back to this. This genre and type of comic book, because
I think it's worth touching on really quickly. These comics, I've got Power of Hope. I've got Peace on Earth.
Is this all Alex Ross?
These are all oversized Alex Ross comics written by Paul Dini.
Paul Dini did the Batman series.
Batman series, Lost. He's one of my favorite writers right now. But
would these all fit into the alternative comic book?
Yes,
for you?
Still. Although they are very...
They don't have to, because they're very self-contained.
Yes.
They don't tell a storyline. All of them are sort of kind of like an exercise on, could Superman actually change the world? Does he have that ability? And it goes into, if I remember right, it's been a while since I've read these.
Term papers on each... with visual term papers?
Well... I had a sort of an arrow in reaction to these in the sense that I started to read these and didn't get through them. I read like one. I read Wonder Woman and stopped. You know, I sort of had a feeling that there are sort of
Wonder Woman. Let me see that one.
Yeah, that's why Peter read it first too.
She is stunningly beautiful. The artwork is amazing, but there's no dialogue in this. This is all like it's like someone wrote a short story with a great deal of love and affection for these characters, addressing sort of the issues of their lives and giving you a sense of what maybe a day in their life is like without it actually being a specific storyline.
And that didn't attract you? Because it really just caught me.
I actually did not connect with that. Okay. I thought it was intriguing and interesting, but it didn't...
These seem to be the comic book equivalent of a poem to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
A love poem to the characters.
Yeah. Very specific.
I actually didn't.
She's totally hot in this.
I didn't
though.
Catch it
she's
as being to
hot.
The characters. Like, each of them dealt
about
with.
About the characters, then. About their lives. I mean, look.
Okay,
you know,
using the characters as an examination, like, do superpowers actually give you the ability to change the world? Each of them in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that was my opinion. But these things also led into, for me, I discovered the 9/11 comics through these.
Oh, God.
You
those
know?
Were depressing and
some
touching.
Some were depressing, some were very uplifting, some made me really angry, you know? But there is another line of comic books, most of them superhero comic books, that are like charity fundraiser comics. Did any of you read the X-Men Famine comic books of the late 80s?
No.
God, they were bad looking back at them in retrospect. But at the time, I thought they were super cool. Like, the incarnation of Famine rises in Ethiopia, and then it's up to the X-Men to go fight him. And, like, Rogue realizes, there's no way you can do that. So Rogue goes around and she absorbs the powers of all the X-Men into herself and goes and tries to beat them. And so she's, like, the X-Men amalgam character. But and all the money of that, all the money of that went to famine relief. All the money from the 9/11 comic books went to 9/11 charities.
Huh.
You know, a lot of these comic book creators are really, I don't know, they sound like kind of down-to-earth, you know, good folk to me.
Well, you only can make so much money, you know, on them. It's not like they're rock stars.
True.
Well, Lisa, why don't you tell us about Why the Last Man?
Oh, yeah. I can tell you really quickly. Why the Last Man, genius comic, still going. It's collected in several books now. I think at least 4 or 5.
Uh-huh.
And the premise is that this guy wakes up, walks outside, and all the men on the planet have died, and he.
This was another one that felt like a Twilight Zone episode.
The last
to me.
One, but last and one. It starts with this quirky premise, but it goes on and on and on. Yeah, and it's really, really well written. You'd think it would be like a sort of a sociological experiment premise, but you end up getting really invested in the characters. There's an overarching story. He goes on a long quest.
Yeah, I bet he does go on a long quest.
you would expect this to basically degrade into a porno movie.
Was it a hard quest?
It's not a porno movie.
And let me just tell you. Like one
There's
of the
girl
one
on girl
the,
action.
One of the twists is that he is actually in love with someone and doesn't feel like, you know, I mean, he's trying to be faithful to her, you know, and it's
very selfish of him. He
yes,
needs
you
to
know,
keep the human.
I agree. You know, we want to see the triple X version of this. No,
it's really interesting.
It's really
a good like a overarching zone. Mystery to it. Also, again, like a deeper mythology, a deeper story. It's really good.
That's cool.
Does a comic book work with that type of... It just doesn't seem like...
It works
fine. It's so compelling. I mean, it's got some problems to it.
It's a different manner of storytelling.
Like, what are you capturing
really
visually in that you need... Like, you know, I haven't seen
it's
this.
It's pretty simply told, actually, because you do get the idea that it's the writing that's more important. It's not like one. It's not like these Alex Ross books where you can look at the pictures all day long. But it really is more about pure storytelling.
But think about, like, that's one of the things that I loved about the different comics. Like, when I come back to Sandman, right? Sandman by Neil Gaiman, multiple stories dealing with its own mythology. They're incredibly wordy, right? Mm-hmm. All of the Sandman comic books are story, 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 word, 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 language, language, language everywhere. And then you have the powers one we were talking about, where, you know, there may be some dialogue on a page. It's possible.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But there are going to be large stretches of time where it's just kind of art, observation.
Yeah. But that's fine, because that's why you're not writing a novel.
Yeah. Right.
But it's rare to see that kind of silence in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, or a novel. You know, there's there's always that kind of stream of consciousness
Powers
in a novel.
Is incredibly economical.
This is very comic books I'm sort of rediscovering this. Comic books seem really unique in the ability to tell a story silently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that, I mean, that's what I mean is, like, you know, if you have a story, it feels like you should pick the medium which to tell it the best. That's why I was asking that question. Like,
well,
okay,
it's
completely compelling.
Because you're used to the medium being used to show things that are amazing. Like, right. You like superheroes doing amazing things. And in this case, it's real. It's all reality. It's just a great story.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And one of my favorite moments in it is there's this part where he gets to his mother, who is a...
Congresswoman.
She's a congresswoman. And some of the bad guys in the film are Amazons, women that have basically...
Basically said the men died, good.
And we think it's good. They're angry at the men for having passed, and they've decided that this is great. And all of a sudden, there's lights outside, and there's an army of some sort outside, and he's afraid. He's like, is it the Amazon? She goes, no, worse, Republicans. And basically, you know, there are very few women... Republican, you know, senators and congresswomen, but there are a lot of Democrats, and so the wives of all the senators and congressmen feel like, you know, since their husbands have died, that they should just get the positions,
right?
And the Democrats are like, no, you have to be elected, you know. And so there's this big sort of a war going on between them, and it's like, but it's just like these weird twists and turns. You're like, I never would have thought of that, you know.
Right.
Now we're running out of time, so why don't we just really quickly round up the last ones? Just tell briefly what they are. And kind of move through them. One of them is Alias. This is not the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of this is that there's a girl with superpowers who couldn't hack it as a hero. I mean, other people were good at being heroes. They weren't afraid. She was terrified every time she went out.
Right.
She couldn't do it, and she's basically become a private detective. And it's about a woman, a private detective with powers, with superpowers, who stumbles across something that's bigger than she would have imagined.
And she has to get back into it.
And she doesn't quite become a superhero. She's still a private detective, but it's about what goes on with that. And it's very, it's interesting. It's unusual.
And a very mature story, which I like.
Very mature story.
I mean, it's got sounds interesting.
Couple of ones that I really like.
Put on my stomach.
You got
a warning label, people.
Yes, yes,
it's called Alias. You can buy it in the stores.
That's one of the ones that I want to. There's a comic that I read a number of years ago, but which is really great. It's Howard Chaykin. It's called American Flag. And that one's
good and very adult.
That could be very, very, very adult, but it's pretty brilliant. It's about a guy who used to be a TV star, and he goes to Mars to become a cop. And basically he says, you know, they sampled my image and they paid me out and now I'm done. It's a brilliant one. Nexus is another one, which is a brilliant, brilliant comic. And finally, Lone Wolf and Cub.
Aww. Now, this is a classic.
Yeah.
This is an older comic. It's one of my favorites,
so
obviously.
Great. Oh, my God.
It's the type of thing where they tell stories so beautifully without any words.
Yes.
And often,
storytelling.
And often through the eyes of Lone Wolf is a rogue samurai, a samurai who has gone the path of death.
He's a ronin.
He's a ronin, but he's accepted the path of death or something like that. I can't remember.
I picked that up today. Yeah. It's got a great kind of
beautiful style.
Calligraphy looking art. Yeah.
And so he's brought his son on the same path. They've basically made this choice. That
you know there's a movie that Lone
Wolf. Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
And it's already been made?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's 1970.
Yeah. It's old, but it's actually pretty good, too. Very bloody. And oftentimes it tells the story through the eyes of the child. And it's so interesting how it does that.
Yeah.
Another one is The Sandman.
Don mentioned.
Don, do you want to talk about this since you know it?
Okay. Sandman is a very long, amazing story. It's probably one of the most popular of the indie. And it can probably be credited with the successful launch of an entire publishing company, Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, it follows a world where these beings called the Eternals live, who all represent an incarnation of some aspect of humanity: death, dream, delirium, destruction. I can't remember the last one. Despair, desire, right? And so it's very hard to say what it's about. It's just multiple storylines woven in and out of a world, some of which are very mundane, some of which are very fantastic. Some of which deal with kind of an Alice in Wonderland feel to them. It has won, and I'm trying to remember what it won. I think it was a Hugo Award.
Yeah.
For A Midsummer Night's Dream, the storyline, where that's probably one of my favorites.
Is that the one where Dream's captured? No.
No, that's the very first one, Preludes and Nocturnes. Midsummer Night's Dream is the story where Titania commissions a play for Oberon, and Shakespeare writes them A Midsummer Night's Dream. And it's performed for them throughout the course of the comic. And this, if I recall correctly, it's the night that the elves left. You know, it's very
touching. The artwork
touching
seems a little
very nice.
It's weird.
The artwork changes continuously throughout the series.
Yeah, it's very unusual artwork. Writers, but it's so it's really interesting. I got absorbed by it. Just
it is
just
easily one of the best comic book series out there, without question.
But very chatty.
Some of the ones that I would throw out there is a one-shot graphic novel by Frank Miller, Martha Washington Goes to War. I've mentioned it on the podcast at least once before, I'm sure. It is about a woman in the future who grows up in the projects after the United States has fractured into multiple warring city-states. Some of them are very comical, like the Midwest is taken over by McDonald's, and it's a big corporate cattle ranch. The South is the Southern Feminist Confederacy. You know, it's very kind of, what do you call them? God, I'm
parodies.
Sorry. Parodies of existing ideas.
Satires.
Satires. But well done, well executed, and believable. Right? Huh. The other one is actually an old comic book series, which I doubt you'll be able to dig up anymore. But reading all of these, remind me, if you go to your old comic book sections and your used comic book stores, you might be able to find some of the New Universe, printed by Marvel, DC 10, I believe it was called.
Mm-hmm.
DC 10 is almost a prototype for a lot of the comics we read here, where a white flash happens over the Earth, and all of a sudden, multiple people find themselves having superpowers.
That seems to be kind of a theme that
flash?
Yeah, well, normal people waking up with dealing with their new superpower.
Yep.
It's an easy in. Yep. You know, it really is.
What's right. The George R. R. Martin edited series? Aces. It's got Aces and Joker.
Oh, yeah.
And
Wild Cards.
Great. Same thing. Yeah.
Well, aliens drop a virus that gives people, you know.
But in DC 10, it's a bunch of people who suddenly discover they have superpowers. And for every positive superpower you get, there's a negative side effect. So this guy is super fast, but he can't stop moving, so he's almost virtually invisible because he's constantly vibrating and needs to eat about 16,000 calories a day. There's a woman who's very old at the beginning of the series, and after the flash, she starts emitting this light off of her skin. And whoever the light touches, she starts draining their life force from them and making herself younger and more vital again. So she has to go through the entire series covering herself head to toe. It's some good, interesting takes on superpower genre.
Okay, a couple other quick ones. Sleeper, Out in the Cold.
Cool.
It was cool. It was interesting. Basic concept is it's a superhero who goes undercover, pretends to be a bad guy, has to live as if he's a bad guy, and then the only person that knows that he's actually a good guy dies. So everyone else thinks that he's a bad guy, and he has to survive. You know, he has no one to go to, and he has to make some tough choices because he can't. If he gets found out, he'll be killed. And his power is very intriguing too, which is that whenever he has pain, he stores it up and can use it as a weapon to kill other people. So very interesting.
Shit. All right, hurry up on these. We got to wrap this show up.
We've got Planetary. I loved this one. This one was really interesting. Planetary, the Fourth Man. I don't even know how to describe this one, but this was just below top 10 in powers for me. I thought it was really interesting.
It's also Warren Ellis too.
It's also Warren Ellis.
And Cassaday, a great artist who also does the X-Men, Astonishing X-Men.
And that one, I don't even know how to describe that one. Transmetropolitan. This one is such an unusual comic book. It's about the future, and it's about a reporter, and his only ability is the ability to type, and it's such a bizarre story.
It's like a punk
reporter. His name's Spider Robinson. Good last name. Right. So anyway, it's interesting. I don't know if it was my favorite of the group, but it was. It's really worth taking a look at.
You can't put it down when you're reading it.
Well, Warren Ellis is a beautiful writer in the way he uses language. You know, it's intriguing. You should at least pick it up and glance through it while you're while you are in the comic book store.
Because they love that.
Torso? Yeah, well, they love it, but they let you do it. So if you hide in the back where they don't look. Torso. This is Brian Michael Bendis. It is basically, it's a true story of...
Isn't that what they're turning into the film?
They might be. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a true story of Elliot Ness investigating a murder after he'd caught Capone, and it's really interesting. It's really well done.
Elliot Ness with a serial killer.
Yeah, Elliot Ness tracking the serial killer. Yeah. And let's see, are there any of the ones we missed? There's one more in your pile, Don, I think, that we didn't do. Supreme Powers, is that it?
I haven't read it.
Ah. This one's kind of a take on Superman. It's a guy who has Superman sort of powers. And it's sort of about how people would react to this. I mean, you know, the government realizes there's someone out. He's the first person to have these powers, and then other people start to follow along, developing powers like that. But he's the very first one to show up, and it's how would the government react? How would things like that happen?
Cool.
Interesting.
It's really good.
And it's somewhat mature sometimes.
Peter's showing us boobs now.
Boobs. Meh. Well, again, marathon episode here.
Another marathon episode. You know, we're going to probably come back to comic books and alternative comic books again and again and again.
Yeah, before all of you start panning us for the comics we didn't read.
I was saying, is everybody going to Comic-Con?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Awesome.
I was thinking about getting a room and going overnight.
Yeah.
We should.
Yeah, we should totally do that.
I'll sleep in the bathtub. water beds. For those of you who start panning us for which comic books we haven't read, go to our forums and tell us which comics we should go read.
And where can you go to find those forums, Don?
Well, I believe those forums are on www.geekson.com.
Exactly. And you can also email us at geeks@geekson.com, or you can go and email us individually if you'd like. I'm not sure why.
Who are we? I don't think we introduced ourselves, did we?
Matt. Yeah, we go online.
Peter.
And,
it's all that matters.
I'm Peter. I'm the one that sounds exactly like Matt. Yeah. So anyway, you can go and email us. Get on our forums. There are a lot of people talking about things.
We have more pictures of E3 to put up still, I think.
Yes, we do.
So
actually,
we will have more going up on our E3 site.
Excellent. With some captions.
Lots of pictures of booth babes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There will be some captions on those pictures.
Aaron was out getting pictures of the console games. We were out getting pictures of a booth babe.
I've got booth babes on there.
Yeah, there's booth babes up there.
You're so proud.
Yes.
Don got the best pictures with the booth babes. I got to tell you know, like, there's one picture of me, and I look... Don's always got, like, great pictures, and I've got, like... I look like this distorted head person. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know what it is.
Don's don't lie.
Don's very photogenic. I don't know what it is.
It's the Ritalin.
All right, so go to our website, check all that stuff out. And again, we still have that Frapper page, and there's more people being added. But if you want to post a little pin on the where you live and where you listen to Geeks On, go on there and
write us with what you would like to hear us discuss. Also,
yeah, exactly.
And please spread the geek. Spread the geek love.
That's right. All right, everybody, have a good geek week.
Have a great geek week.
Bye.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks.